Welcome to the Hirschfeld Century Podcast. I am Catherine Eastman, the Archives Manager of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation.
And I'm David Leopold, the Creative Director. And today we are going back to school.
That's right. It's back to school season. We're going back to college.
We're going to Harvard, folks.
Yep. Big time.
We're Ivy League. And the reason we're going to Harvard is because, you may not believe this, but Harvard University has the largest public collection of Hirschfeld artwork of any place on the entire planet.
That's true.
And it was put together primarily by one alumni, and started in 1976.
Yes, Mel Seaton was his name, Melvin, and he was a fantastic collector of Hirschfeld works.
Mel Seaton was a connoisseur. He was an investment banker who had made his money that way. And throughout his life, when he was a student at Harvard, he took many classes in the art department and on art history. Mm. And really, it helped him become a connoisseur.
Interesting.
So throughout his working career, he supported art programs at Harvard. And when he retired from active investment banking, he really spent a lot of time not just collecting artwork for Harvard, but for a number of museums across the country.
Right.
Mel died in 2011, and when he died, the memorial service was at the Frick Gallery in New York, the Frick Museum. And I was astounded by how many important people there were in the art world and in institutions from around New York and around the country and even around the world. He was a very significant contributor and donor who did not put his name on things, but rather was all about the quality of the artwork.
Right, right. And an interesting obviously, he was a great fan of Hirschfeld.
Yes,
and
indeed.
An interesting fact is that he was colorblind, which drew him to the black and white works of Mr. Al Hirschfeld.
That's very interesting. Now, I knew him, and we never talked about that.
Now, this is just according to his New York Times obituary.
Well, if it's in the New York Times, obviously, it can't be wrong.
Yes, nobody lies in their obituary either. So he was a great fan of Hirschfeld, and so we've got a lot of drawings. How many drawings are there actually in Harvard's collection?
There are over 100 drawings.
Easy.
And they also have prints.
Yes.
They have a collection of sketchbooks.
Right.
They have a number of pieces of ephemera. Mel was a very shrewd collector, and he combed auctions and sales and galleries all over the world looking for what he wanted. And whether this was a Fragonard or a New Yorker cartoon, because he ended up creating the largest private collection of New Yorker cartoons of anyone anywhere.
Right.
But how he got started at Harvard with Hirschfeld, it wasn't his idea.
Interesting.
It was Agnes Mongan.
Right.
Who was an incredibly important art historian at a time when women weren't art historians.
Right.
When she first started working at the Fogg Museum at Harvard, she was the keeper of drawings because they, at that time, this is in the 1940s, they did not allow women to be curators.
Wow, keeper of drawings. Yeah, that's so like, so it sounds like witchcraft, like a witch or something, like the keeper of the stones.
Eventually, she did become, by the end of the 40s, they decided that women could be a curator.
What?
In fact, she was the first curator at any major art institution in America.
First female curator.
And eventually she became the associate director and eventually the director of the Fogg Museum. And she was the first woman to head a major art museum.
Wow. And the Fogg Museum is Harvard's museum.
Yes.
That's the name of Harvard's museum.
Yes.
So it was her idea to bring Hirschfeld to Harvard.
It was September 1976. Hirschfeld had just done what is arguably an incredible drawing of Richard Kiley in a revival of Man of La Mancha.
Right.
And I looked, you know, I've done research at Harvard, and I found the letter that she wrote to her superior at the time saying that we need to find an alumni to acquire this drawing for us, because Hirschfeld may never get better than this.
Wow.
This is such an incredible example of his drawings. And which I think was very, she was very shrewd and she was very, she understood what she was looking at.
Yes, she understood the art.
She wasn't looking at the celebrity.
Right.
She wasn't looking at the play. She was looking at the drawing.
Yep.
It's the same reason why the Metropolitan Museum of Art collects Hirschfeld's drawings. Mm-hmm. They think he is one of the masters of American draftsmanship. And the subject matter is not entirely important to them. It's the drawing that's important to them.
Right.
So the person that they, the alumni that they found to acquire this work for Harvard was Mel Seiden.
Wow.
And I never asked Mel directly what happened next.
Mm-hmm.
But he started to want to have more Hirschfeld drawings. He saw the beauty and the draftsmanship in the drawings, and he started to collect them, and he wanted a good representative sampling of the work at Harvard in their Harvard Theater Collection, and he went about to start acquiring that, some directly from Hirschfeld, but oftentimes he would find them in very unlikely places. So Mel started to acquire a wide range of works, and because of that, as I said, not only is it the largest collection, but it is the most comprehensive collection.
And thinking of it now, it's almost like a Hirschfeld, like another Hirschfeld Century, their collection. Yes. It's just everything. Just, he's got something of every period, every type of genre. He's got one of everything, it seems. At least one of everything, and many times more than one of everything.
If you look at the Hirschfeld Century book, we have collection credits in the back. You'll see a substantial number from Harvard.
Or quite a few.
If you went to the exhibition, we also borrowed probably a half dozen works from them.
If you listen to this podcast and you look at the nice little icon on your screen, that self-portrait is one of the works at Harvard.
Right.
We call that one colloquially the Fogg self-portrait.
Because it's at the Fogg Art Museum.
Yep.
And I think he did, I think it's a, one of the reasons I think it's such a great self-portrait is Hirschfeld, I think, was conscious of where it was going.
Yes. So it was commissioned by the Fogg. Is that correct?
Right. Well, it was commissioned by Mel.
By Mel Seiden.
To go to the
Fogg. For the museum. Yes. Yeah.
And that's the only, it went from his drawing board essentially to the Fogg.
Right.
And that was in 1985. And I think that was a portrait that was Hirschfeld for the last three decades of his life, maybe four.
Right.
I mean, it was a great self-portrait. And as I said, I think he did that because he knew where it was going.
Right. So let's give everybody a sampling of the Harvard collection before we get into the nitty gritty of it. What are the big hitters here?
Gosh, there are so many big hitters. This is an all-star team.
It is.
one of the great heavy hitters is from a completely obscure show that never made it into New York called Put It Into Writing.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a review of reviews. And Hirschfeld did this wonderful drawing of a G. Clef as a chorus girl with a glass of champagne and a cigarette holder.
And her body is a G. Oh, did I say? Did you already say that?
Yes.
Her body's a G. Clef? I wasn't listening.
Typical.
Yeah. Well, I just thought of it now, too. That was on a lot of our merchandise for the Hirschfeld Century show. It was almost like a Harvard sponsored show. All the merchandise they could sell at the Fogg Museum.
Well, we chose that because the museum was concerned about likeness rights, and they didn't want to have to worry about somebody coming and saying, you're selling our likeness.
Right.
We've never had a problem with that, but they said, what are great images that are not
personality-based?
Personality-based.
Yep.
And, of course, there's a lot of great images like that. But Put It In Writing is such a wonderful piece.
Yeah, it is.
They have this great image of the American Ballet Theater.
Yep, that was put into a print.
Yeah, very nice. Made into a print. It was also in the Hirschfeld Century show.
Yep. My husband's favorite drawing, John Lithgow, in M. Butterfly.
This is a model of simplicity. I don't think anybody else could draw it.
It's amazing. It really is wonderful.
And just as amazing, but different, again, very simple, but terrific drawings. Ella Fitzgerald from 1993, which was also made into a print.
Yep.
And Orson Welles,
one
of his last drawing of Orson Welles.
Yep.
Again, a simple, seemingly almost one-line drawing that captures the whole personality and essence of Orson Welles and is a great drawing to boot.
Yep.
So those are just the tip of the iceberg.
So let's start from the beginning now that we've kind of given everybody a taste.
Okay, well, we are not going to go through every drawing because this would be a six-hour podcast.
I thought that's what we were doing. I printed out this whole big list.
No, the I think one of the most important early drawings that are in the collection is Ethel Waters in Africana.
1,000%. It is an amazing drawing. You know I love Rang Tang. For all you Rang Tang fans out there, wait, there's more.
Both of you.
Ethel Waters in Africana. We're not sure when this drawing appeared or even where.
Right.
As the archives manager of the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, I am stamping it summer 1927.
But we don't know that for sure. We have always given it the general date of 1928. But in fact, Catherine does make a good case that there was a period of time in 1927 where he was doing these Cubist style drawings.
Yeah. And then never does it again.
Right.
Then just kind of abandons it.
Right. Yeah. He comes out of that modern art idea.
Right.
But... And I think he is sort of giving a nudge and a wink to cubism mm-hmm. as much as he is to the performer and the production.
Yes, definitely.
But he gets past that pretty quickly.
He does,
because he's
yeah.
really focusing on the drawings.
Yeah, although I love that there are some great drawings. There's not a lot of them, but Ethel Waters and Rang Tang.
Yeah.
Those are two.
Terrific. Jules Hatfield in The Waltz of the Dogs is another great early drawing.
Yep.
And Paula Truman in The Grand Street Follies.
And those are much more simple.
Right.
Much more line-based.
Much more Hirschfeld-like.
Yeah, and much more flat, I think.
Yes.
To me, at least.
Yeah. Well, the Ethel Waters also is a combination of ink and charcoal.
Right, right. That's what those cubist ones are, which is so different. He doesn't usually do that.
Exactly.
Yep.
He was still experimenting.
Yep.
This is in his first year. Remember, his first theatrical caricature is December 1926.
Wow.
So if it's happening in 1927, even if it's the summer of 1927, he hasn't even been doing this for a year.
Right.
And little did he know that he would have 75 more years to hone the craft.
Right.
But, and of course, those are all theater drawings because so few drawings from that period when he did movie work exist.
Right.
So not surprisingly, the collection is heavy on theater because it is housed at the Harvard Theater Collection. I think one of the most significant drawings that is there for theater is relatively early, although Hirschfeld had been working for more than 20 years at that time. It's the Barretts of Wimpole Street and the Glass Menagerie. It's a diptych.
Right.
If you've listened to this podcast before, you've heard me tell the story. if you've read the Hirschfeld Century book, you've read the story. Mm-hmm. But here is one drawing, you see the transition of the American theater.
Right. Right.
And
the emergence of Tennessee Williams.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, a big part of the transition of the American theater. So that this drawing is in this collection, I think, is that was Mel Seddon being very smart.
Yeah.
No one brought that to his attention. He understood what he was looking at.
Yeah, definitely. There's also Lost in the Stars, The View from the Bridge, An Evening with B. Lilly, Amadeus, The Watch on the Rhine.
Yeah, so The Watch of the Rhine is pretty interesting because the collection has the original 1941 cast drawing, which, typical of Hirschfeld, if you look at his drawings from week to week in the New York Times, he's constantly reinventing what he does.
Right.
It's not the same drawing all the time.
This one's very different.
Very different. Much more tonal.
Yes.
Much busier than a typical drawing.
Yep.
One can only assume that he was rushed in some way because, you know, the famous expression that he had was when he was rushed, he did a complicated drawing. And when he had time, he did a simple drawing.
Right.
This looks like he was very rushed.
Yeah.
it's very complicated. And in fact, 30 years later, when he looks at the drawing for inclusion in the book he did with Brooks Atkinson called The Lively Years, he decides that it's not a drawing he wants to put into a book again. Mm. And he redraws it.
Yeah.
He takes the central figures in very similar poses and reduces it down to what we would consider a classic Hirschfeld line drawing.
Yes, definitely.
And you can, so in this one show, you can see the evolution of Hirschfeld's style.
Yeah, yep. Skin of Our Teeth.
The Skin of Our Teeth is not the one that, if you have the book Art and Recollections from 8 decades, or if you're thinking about the New York Times cast drawing, which is this weird... It's not only long, but it's a wide horizontal as well as a long vertical.
Mm.
It's a big drawing. This is not that drawing. This is actually a drawing he did for the Christian Science Monitor,
right,
which was one of three papers he was working for doing theater work in 1942.
Crazy.
And he would only work for the Christian Science Monitor for 1 year because in 1943, for New York newspapers, he goes exclusive with the New York Times.
Right.
Now, another great theater drawing that is in the collection is a revival of Long Day's Journey into Night from 1988.
Mm.
This starred Jason Robards and Colleen Dewhurst.
Mm-hmm. And this drawing's featured in The Lion King, correct?
Yes.
The Lion King, excuse me. I might have said The Lion King.
Al it's Hirschfeld's hard to say. Big concern was people would say it wrong.
It is hard to say, and people always have to ask me twice. Yeah. The Lion King.
Well, it is actually this play and this drawing that is the start of The Lion King.
Right.
Hirschfeld was turning 85.
Mm.
There was Susan Dreyfuss was working for the New York Times at this time, and she suggests a little short film to celebrate his 75th or his 85th birthday. And she follows him to a show, which happens to be the out of town tryout. I think actually up in Massachusetts, up in Boston, of Long Day's Journey into Night. She not only draws Al in the seats with Dolly, going to see the show. She goes backstage and interviews.
She draws him?
No, she films him.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
See,
there's a lot of drawing and filming going on. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
Susan Dreyfuss is a filmmaker, not a. She's actually become quite a fine painter, but at this time she was exclusively a filmmaker, and it was this little 5-minute film that she makes that everyone loves.
Yeah.
That you know, it soon becomes obvious that they should do a documentary, and she starts working on it.
Yeah.
At that time.
Right.
And of course, it takes another 8 years to get it done, but that's the start of it.
Right. And so you can see him actually drawing this on camera.
And what's also amazing is that Harvard has the sketchbook for this drawing.
Wow.
So you can see the sketches.
We've got the whole story for this drawing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can see it from start to finish almost.
Perhaps the most documented drawing of his whole career.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
So that's pretty wonderful to have in this collection.
Yeah.
And they have many of the pieces that go with it.
Right. So there are four drawings of Julie Harris in the collection. And once again, if you've listened to this podcast before, you know I love Julie Harris. I don't know if Mel Seton was a friend of Julie Harris or
no,
what
he was
is.
Not a friend.
No, we don't think so. I mean, that's a significant number. There are a significant number of Julie Harris drawings, to be fair. She was drawn quite a lot.
Oh, at least 25 times.
Yeah, which is quite a lot. But to have four in one collection, that seems like a lot. Maybe he was just a fan.
He also realized that the shows and the drawings were pretty significant. He has the one of the first drawings of Julie Harris, which is member of the wedding.
Mm, she's a little girl.
Yes. With Ethel Waters.
Yeah, that's true. Look at that.
Yeah,
two Ethel Waters drawings.
Making the connections.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that.
Another great early play of Julie Harris was I Am a Camera.
Yes. What is that, 55?
Yeah, I believe
that's
so.
The year from Rebel Without, East of Eden.
And, of course, I Am a Camera is the Christopher Isherwood Berlin stories, which gets made into a musical maybe you've heard of called Cabaret.
I haven't. They also have the drawing of Cabaret with Natasha Richardson and Alan Cumming. And that's the one I was thinking of in my head.
And I think for most audiences today,
that's the Cabaret they think of.
But
going back to Julie Harris, we've also got Julie Harris and Christopher Plummer together. I think they were both winning awards or something that year.
Well, they were these two old hands on Broadway.
Gotcha.
This is done in the late 90s.
Yeah,
so, he's been drawing her now for 40 years, more than 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the really crazy thing about that is, so he starts drawing her in the late 40s. I think the first one is 1948.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd been working for 28 years at that time.
Right.
And he would be drawing Julie Harris up until her last drawing is in the late 90s.
Mm.
The last one is, I think, Lucifer's Child.
Well, that makes sense.
She plays an ancient writer, Isaac Dickerson.
Mm.
And so But here it is. He'd been working, even though he had drawn her for more than 40 years, there's a significant part of his career before it, and there's even career after it.
Right.
It's an incredibly long career for both of them, except Hirschfeld's is just longer.
Right. And then the one we skipped over was Skyscraper, that Julie Harris is in as well.
Charles Nelson Reilly is also in that.
All right, let's talk just briefly about my favorite medium, television. There's not a lot of television drawings in the collection, but the one big one is what we call Me in the Set. What's the official name of it?
Well, it's just Television Personalities of 1954.
We call it Me in the Set.
Right. It was that was the name given to the lithograph that was published of it. I don't think Hirschfeld ever was too thrilled with that title.
No. Okay. Well, maybe I'll stop using it then.
It's so easy, though.
It is, yeah.
Because there are plenty of drawings of television personalities.
Yeah.
But that work is really iconic in the sense that it really captures
early television.
Early television.
We got, of course, how can we forget? We've got What's My Line?
We've
got Groucho and Secret Word or whatever his show was.
Milton Berle.
Yeah.
Norman Sheen is in that drawing. And it also has Joseph Welch. At Joe McCarthy, the televised McCarthy hearings, where, essentially Welch is saying to him, at long last, sir, have you no decency?
Right. Classic.
It's a really important drawing in the history of television.
Yeah, it's great. It was made into a print. Oh, we already said it was made into a print.
And a print is at the Paley Center for Media as well. If you want to talk about early television, the shorthand would be this drawing.
And Groucho's show was You Bet Your Life, but it had the secret word in it. Right. Is that how it goes?
Exactly. Okay. I believe the duck that came down with the secret word is in the drawing.
Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And then the other television drawing is Fantasy Island, which was a TV Guide cover.
Right. And so no really
no collection's comprehensive complete. Collection. Yeah, no collection is complete. I'll put my foot down right now. No collection's complete without a TV Guide drawing.
Museums, she's throwing down the gauntlet. And then there's film drawings, and there's actually a number of film drawings, a number of United Artists film drawings.
Yes, Paths of Glory with Kirk Douglas. It's a great one. The Miracle Worker, also a fantastic, fantastic drawing.
And Bancroft and Patty Duke.
Yep. And then two West Side Story drawings. So tell us about West Side Story.
So in 1960, Hirschfeld spent the summer. He took a train out west and did drawings of Elmer Gantry and Inherit the Wind.
Right.
He then took the train down to Austin to see Nina, but he liked to draw. And so United Artists was, John Wayne was filming the Alamo down there.
Yep.
So he goes on to the set of the Alamo.
Fun.
And so that's in this one sketchbook. And we know this. I mean, the sketchbooks almost act as a travel log.
Yeah.
You can see where he's going. And where does he end up? Over on 10th Avenue, as Jerome Robbins is auditioning dancers for the film version of West Side Story.
Yep. So there are two drawings of the movie, really.
Right.
There's one called On the Set of West Side Story, which is on 10th Avenue.
Which shows Jerry Robbins and Robert Wise and some of the dancers. You see a little bit of New York in the background.
Right. And then the other one is the West Side Story finale.
Right.
Which I don't think is actually the finale.
It's close to it.
It's close to it, yeah. Don't think it ends that way. But that's beside the point.
I mean, there's one other drawing of the film version of West Side Story, which is what is typically seen as the cast drawing of that. That's not in this collection. In fact, we don't know where that drawing is.
Check your grandmother's attic. I always tell you.
Please.
there's a nice United Artists collection.
And a very dramatic drawing.
Much the
different
finale?
Than what you would 100%, think of a Hirschfeld drawing.
It's very loud. You can almost hear it.
Right. Yeah. And it's painful.
Yeah.
But there's Tom Jones, another United Artists film. There is a wonderful, somewhat complicated drawing. With Albert Finney?
No.
Oh, it's a great draw. It's a great film. You should watch it.
Okay. The next, let's talk about Dance Next. Because this is kind of how we've organized this episode, because there are so many drawings. To do it chronologically would be relatively boring. And there are quite a few groupings like the Julie Harris. Like there's right. four Julie Harris drawings and United Artists drawings. So we've kind of grouped them by subject loosely. So we'll talk about dance next because there are some really, really remarkable pieces within the dance category.
We've already told you about American Ballet Theater.
Right.
There is a great drawing of Baryshnikov doing Metamorphosis.
Which is, he's a cockroach.
Right.
Yes.
And so the drawing is sort of up close and personal
it's
with
crazy.
Him.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's intense.
Yeah. And just a little fun fact about this drawing. When I was cleaning up the image for it, it was a little tilted to the left. And right. So I straightened it out so it was nice and straight on the computer screen. I thought, perfect. And I always wondered, every time I would see it, it was always just a little bit crooked to the left. And it wasn't until the Hirschfeld Century Show where we borrowed this piece for the exhibition. I saw it in person. The drawing is actually tilted to the left. And so now I've stopped doing that. I'll only do it on drawings, which I'm really certain are supposed to be right. straight. But this one, it's actually tilted to the left a little bit. So he's kind of like, it's almost like he's climbing, yeah. like as a cockroach, which makes it much more creepy than just straight on. But that's just a little fun fact.
Yeah, no, and he captures the spirit and the personality of the performance.
Right.
And, of course, Baryshnikov, who he had done wonderful drawings of already, mm-hmm. and Giselle and the Nutcracker.
Yeah, that's a great one.
But this is really a wonderful piece. There's a great drawing of Galina Pavlova.
Oh, yeah, I love this one.
In the 1983 revival of On Your Toes.
Yeah, I love this drawing. It's just so elegant.
Right, and this is where he's making use. He Hirschfeld would always say, know your limitations. Mm-hmm. And so you've heard me talk about the Friday drawings, and that very limited space actually encouraged Hirschfeld to create better work.
Right.
Not better work, but, you know, really...
more innovative
yes.
work.
Yeah. He was constantly reinventing what he did.
Yeah.
It was never a static thing with him. And this drawing uses that space brilliantly. Mm-hmm. So it had great impact on the page, even though it was relatively small.
Right. There's also that iconic image of Fred Astaire.
Oh, yeah, which was later made into a limited
right.
edition
right.
etching.
That's a wonderful one.
Yeah. And as we know, Fred Astaire is the Fred Astaire of dance, and Hirschfeld is the Fred Astaire of ink.
Yes. Yeah. That's one of my favorite quotes to say, Fred Astaire of dance.
But there are also portraits of Martha Graham.
Yep.
George Balanchine.
Yep. All American. David thinks it's hilarious. I put this in the dance category, but it's Ray Bolger. And to me, Ray Bolger is a dancer.
Right. Well, that's how I think he saw himself.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's dancing in the drawing.
He is mid-flight.
Yes. Is this a musical?
Mel Brooks musical.
But a stage musical.
Yes.
Okay. So it's dance in my mind. David giggled at me. He said, you put All American in dance?
Oh, you know, as you can see what I'm working with, folks.
All right. What's next, David?
Well, while we're on dance, let's talk about music.
Great.
There are two great portraits of Irving Berlin.
Yes.
Done in 1988, which was both his
done,
centennial
yeah.
year.
Right.
One is in color that was done for Reader's Digest.
Mm-hmm.
And one he did for the New York Times,
gotcha.
Which showed him in the 1920s.
Yes, very young. Well, they're both kind of very young.
Oh, the color one, he's older.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, he's definitely
fair enough,
older.
Fair enough.
But the one he did for the Times of Irving Berlin in the 1920s mm-hmm. is a really terrific drawing. Mm. And sort of captures both the sort of wonderfulness and the sort of, I wouldn't say reclusiveness, but the sort
yeah.
of cantankerous side of,
yeah.
of Irving Berlin. But there's a great drawing of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Oh, yeah.
That was done in 1993 yeah. On the 50th anniversary of Oklahoma.
That would be the definitive, that is the image of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Right. There's a book out by Todd Purdom.
Yep, right on the cover.
That we licensed that drawing for the cover.
Yep.
It's called Something Wonderful. It's a wonderful book and you should
Which
read
is
it.
My, well, no, Edelweiss is my favorite Rodgers and Hammerstein song. But Something Wonderful would be number two.
We all have our favorites.
Yes.
And then one other music drawing I want to point out, because most people, I don't think, have seen this,
yeah.
is the conductor, Lauren Maisel.
Yeah, this one's very different. And I picked it out because it was a little different than what we're used to seeing.
Well, in some ways, it was done in 2002, but in many ways, it's a throwback to his very earliest works. It's a fadeaway drawing, where right. He has got the conductor posed against a black background, and mm-hmm. the black shows his jacket, and so he just shows some hands, the baton, his collar, and his yep. head, and yet we know everything about how he's moving and what he's dressed like.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's I love that. So interesting.
So that's really a full circle. And then, I mean, just when you think this is all Broadway people, you have Lauren Maisel and you have Maurice Ravel.
Yeah, I always love waking up in the morning, looking at the Hirschfeld drawings that I have to pick out from the day, and I've got a classical composer. I get right. so excited. Maybe, you know, I'm the only one, and everybody's like, oh, great, they put up another classical composer today. But it's just so interesting that, you know, we've got everybody.
Yeah.
And Ravel, who, you know, most people don't even know Ravel, but, you know, it's just great.
Right.
I love that.
And it doesn't matter if you don't know what he looks like, because if you look at this drawing...
Because I'm going to be honest, I don't know what he looks like either. I'm going to assume it looks like this drawing.
It's very accurate, but it's a very engaging drawing,
right,
no matter
right.
whether you know what he looks like
yes,
or not.
Yes, definitely. Let's talk about musicals, since we're talking about music.
Sure. A really great collection of musicals mm-hmm. in here. The Tony winner, Hallelujah Baby, mm-hmm. A 1983 revival of Porgy and Bess, which is in many ways... one of the great drawings of Porgy and Bess.
Yeah, it really shows everybody and
right.
kind of sets the, I think it sets the tone
right.
a little bit for it. Yeah.
There's a great one from 64, but this is from 1983. Mm-hmm. As I said, the original, both the original production of Cabaret and the 1998 revival.
Right, right.
And then we had talked about the drawing of Put It in Writing, mm-hmm. this drawing of G. Clef. Well, I remember finding a clipping of this, and when I found the clipping, I didn't know what it was for.
Right.
And I asked Hirschfeld, and we talked about it and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then Mel Cedum found the original drawing. Mm. And in 1997, Ben Brantley writes a piece on musicals there was always a piece in the Times the Sunday, either before the Tonys or the Sunday of the Tonys. Mm-hmm. And so he's writing about sort of this musicals that are not all about Oklahoma or something like that, but much more psychological musicals. And he does something, it's the only time I can remember him doing it, where he takes that G. Clef image and puts it on stage and gives it a standing ovation, which is very similar to a drawing he did for Star in 1968.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking of, the movie yeah. Star mm-hmm. with Julie Andrews. And I was okay, that's interesting. It's very much like that drawing.
Right, and so he's combined these two drawings to mm-hmm. make a remarkable drawing.
Yeah.
And I don't think he thought, wow, everybody knows these drawings, because one is from a flop film yeah. and one is from a musical that never made it into New York.
A review of reviews.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a classic drawing of Where's Charlie? That drawing is not yeah. in the collection. In fact, we don't know where that drawing mm-hmm. is. But Hirschfeld at that time in the 40s would often visit rehearsals. And so in August of, I think, 1947, 1948, I forget when that drawing actually appeared, when the show opened, Hirschfeld went to a rehearsal of Where's Charlie? And we see Ray Bolger and Alan M. McCleary and mm-hmm. George Abbott. They almost look like they're in a classroom.
Yeah, yeah.
Going over the show.
Yep.
There's a nice little collection. There's a My Fair
musicals.
Lady
yep.
with Rex Harrison. It's not the 20th, it's like the 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
He also has a lot of theater creative people with an emphasis on playwrights.
Right.
You have Arthur Miller, Hal Prince.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wonderful drawing of English playwrights.
Mm.
So you get it. What's so great about the collection, it gives you the theater from all different sides.
Yeah.
You know, you not only have the cast drawings and the individual drawings, but you have
rehearsal drawings,
right, backstage drawings.
Behind the scenes people. Yeah,
right.
creative members. And then another little grouping. I love these. I don't know what this is about me. I guess I love finding patterns. We all do. But there's also a Grapes of Wrath section. So we have a cast drawing with Gary Sinise and Lois Smith.
Right. This is the 1990 Broadway adaptation that won a Tony.
Yep. And then there's a single portrait of Lois Smith. Sure. Another East of Eden shout out. and then before that, though, was this in the 70s? There's Henry Fonda in The Grapes of Wrath.
This was part of the Movies to Remember
series. Right. That's what I thought. Yep. So there's a little Grapes of Wrath. So I think, I mean, to me, what I see is little things that maybe Mel C. Eden liked, like right. Julie Harris, or maybe he really liked Grapes of Wrath, or, you know, I don't know, maybe he liked Ray Bolger. Who doesn't like Ray Bolger?
Right.
But well, there are these kind of little...
I will say that was an important production of its time.
Mm-hmm. The 1990.
So, right.
Yeah.
The cast drawing is very different from cast drawings he was doing at that
time. It looks like, I mean, they're in the Dust Bowl. It looks...
Yes, it's much more of a sketch than a simple line.
Oh, it reminds me of that guy, the Silver Tassery?
Is that what it's Jack called? Palance and the Silver Tassel.
Yeah, Tassel, yeah. Reminds me of that drawing a lot. And then we have drawings that don't really fit anywhere, but that we think are still important. So much as I love groupings, there are some that just don't fit. The first one's the Mikado. I feel like we've talked about the Mikados before.
Right. The Harvard Theater Collection for many years had the curator of the collection was a fellow by the name of Rick Wilson, who was a Gilbert and Sullivan scholar.
Oh, gotcha.
And so over the years, Mel knew that. Mm-hmm. And the fact is, Hirschfeld was one of those artists who captured...
He drew Gilbert and Sullivan.
Right. I mean, the Doily Cart
mm-hmm.
Company would come and present whole seasons.
Right.
And Hirschfeld would frequently do drawings of the whole season in one
drawing.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, I love those.
So you would see the Mikado and the gondoliers.
Yeah,
and,
I can never tell them apart.
Yeah, HMS Pinafore.
And, yeah,
you know, all of those all put together.
Yeah.
But this Mikado drawing is wonderful. It's actually the companion to, wasn't it the companion to On Your Toes?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes.
So while the drawings... the shows have nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
When you saw them on the page, you realized that they resonated with each
yes.
other.
Yes, and this is the one I forget when we talked about this, but these are the two drawings that one has a G clef in it, and the other one has a, what did I say it was? Is it a C clef? A F clef?
I think it's our Rodgers and Hammerstein show. So.
It must be, oh gosh, I can't remember now. I think it's called an F clef, but it has the two clefs on either in each drawing.
Right.
And we didn't really... ever put that together
until we saw the page.
Yeah, until we saw them on the newspaper together. So those are drawings that we're talking about. There's also Death in Philadelphia.
Yes, a Westward Ha drawing.
Yep.
That shows Hirschfeld, Perlman, Vernon Duke, and Ogden Nash in a hotel suite at the Warwick Hotel in Philadelphia, working very, very hard on a show that would flop.
Called Sweet By and By. It was the Hirschfeld, Perlman, Vernon Duke musical, and it was a big disaster.
Disaster.
And after that, Perlman approached Holiday Magazine?
No, it was in the... I'm sure I've told the story. It was in the last week of the show being in Philadelphia. It was obvious it wasn't going anywhere.
Right.
Perlman and Hirschfeld have... lunch with Ted Patrick of Holiday Magazine. He asked them what they're doing once the show opens in New York, and they didn't have the courage to say that it's not opening in New York. They start talking, Perlman starts talking about going sword fishing in Florida, and Hirschfeld talks about going to Hollywood to see Dolly.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow the talk gets on to Bali, and Hirschfeld wax rhapsodic about Bali. And then he says, oh, you should send Sid to Tahiti because he would have a field day complaining about Tahiti. Well, one thing leads to another. I can only assume that one drink led to another. And by the end of it, he commissions them to go around the world.
Right.
And Perlman only will do it if Hirschfeld can come with him.
Right.
And they do.
And that births Westward Ha or Around the World in 80 Clichés.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. So there's a couple of Perlman drawings in the collection from that series, from Listen to the Mockingbird, and some later drawings as well.
Yep.
And some magazine pieces. There's a wonderful color piece from Red Book, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
And to have a comprehensive collection of Hirschfeld, you've got to have some Perlman drawings.
Yeah, and don't worry, everybody. I haven't forgotten my secret project. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
I feel that she's forgotten it.
I haven't. There's also New York Opening. This is from Manhattan and Me?
No, this is from Show Business is No Business.
Why did I think it was Manhattan to me? What am I thinking of? I don't
know. Okay, I'm supposed to read her mind, folks. I cannot do it.
Well, New York opening. This is a classic theater scene.
Right.
I think.
This and it was later used on the poster of
Noises Off. Yes, I got that one right.
Okay. Yes.
Broadway First Nighters is another drawing they have, which is a classic. It's got anybody who's anybody in mid-20th century theater.
Right. This opening is in, nights. I think, 1957 or 1958. It is not the drawing that is the end papers of American theater as seen by Hirschfeld, which was the playbill mural.
Gotcha. But they're both called Broadway First Nighters.
Because they are, inevitably, alas, Broadway First Nighters. But this was another drawing that he did. Again, we don't know what publication it was for, although we do know that it was published in the Best Plays series that year. So there's always the possibility it could have been drawn for that.
For that, yeah.
There's a drawing of Harold Ross, which I'm sure was the intersection of Mel's Mel's collection, which was Hirschfeld and The New Yorker.
Yep.
He knew that he wasn't collecting any New Yorker drawings by Hirschfeld because he had been banned from the magazine.
By Harold Ross.
Right. somebody recently asked, was that ban a long one or a short one? I said, no, it was only 63 years. Or 53 years.
Yep.
And Peter Schickele, there's another great drawing where he is drawn as a bassoon or something.
I thought he was a guitar. A guitar or a violin.
Yeah, or cello.
It's a wind instrument.
Yes.
Or it's a string instrument, not a wind. It's a string instrument. Yeah. I included that one because it's funny.
Right.
Goofy.
So the collection starts with some of the earliest drawings that Hirschfeld did.
Yeah.
And then it ends with pretty much the last drawing.
Yep. Which is Tommy Tune in White Ties and Tails.
This was published in December 2002. And it's a remarkable drawing in the fact that it's just another great Hirschfeld drawing.
Yeah.
We don't typically expect the 99-year-old artist to keep on producing great work up until the end. And Hirschfeld is the exception that proves the rule.
But here
we are. There was no inevitable decline. He literally just stopped.
Yeah.
When we did the Hirschfeld Century Exhibition, we left the last wall for drawings he did in the last 18 months of his career. And arguably, it's some of the best drawing that he did.
Mm-hmm. So this Tommy Tune is the last published caricature of Hirschfeld before he passed in January 2003. So it takes us to the very end.
Right. So with that gives you a sense of the collection.
Yeah.
The drawings
many more we did not mention.
We could do six episodes.
Yeah, there are quite
drawings.
A bit.
But the drawings are not out on display all the time.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to see them, you can contact the Harvard Theater Collection and ask. You have to make an arrangement to see them.
Yep.
They do lend them out for exhibitions. They put on exhibitions of the work. About 10, 12 years ago, there was a wonderful show at the Morgan Library drawn from their collection that would travel to the McNay Art Museum in San Antonio. There's that much of the collection that you could put on that show, and there were other shows going on of Hirschfeld's work at the time. They lent to those shows, and they all got the best work.
Wow, yeah. So this was a good one. It's a little, this one is kind of different, and you get almost everything. You
right.
get something for everything. So this was fun. It was a different episode.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed it.
I did,
certainly
yeah.
hope our listeners enjoyed it.
I don't care.
Talking about things that you can enjoy, if you want to put down the podcast and go out someplace, you should go to the Algonquin. That's up until the end of the month.
Right.
You can go to the Core Club on 55th and Park Avenue. It's a private club, but if you go in there and tell them you want to see the Hirschfeld exhibition, there are 17 pieces, half of them drawings, the other half prints, up at the Core Club. There is works of Hirschfeld at the New York Historical Society in their big show on the Four Freedoms. It doesn't come from our collection. It comes from a private collection. You can even see a Hirschfeld, although it's just a reproduction, up at the Bennington Vermont Art Museum, where they also have a show on the Four Freedoms. Mm, mm-hmm. Of course, anytime you can go to the Paley Center of Media in New York or LA and see works that they did that they have from their collection.
Right. If you like the podcast, please subscribe and write a review.
The reviews really help other people find it, and it really does something for
it helps us.
Catherine's ego.
So we're on Facebook, the Al Hirschfeld Foundation, Twitter and Instagram at Al Hirschfeld.
Put up something every day.
Yep. The podcast is alhirschfeldfoundation.org/podcasts with an S.
For Seiden.
S is for Seiden. That's a good one. For Mel Seiden.
Our theme music is by the one and only Dick Hyman.
Yep.
And you can learn more about Dick at dickhyman.com.
Yep. Anything else, David?
Well, you can write to us, you can complain, you can send advice or give us ideas for future podcasts by writing info@alhirschfeldfoundation.org. You can go to our website at alhirschfeldfoundation.org and look up virtually any drawing that Hirschfeld has done over the 82 years of his career. Although I have to give a shout out again this week to Jay Polk, who in 1 week has shown us 6 drawings that we did not have records of.
I'm going to be honest. I'm a little worried.
What do you mean worried?
He's going to take my job.
Yeah. Jay.
I got to get cracking here. Yeah. Some new stuff.
Now, we really appreciate it. Jay's been doing some great research.
It's amazing.
And finding things that we
don't know about.
The film drawings are the hardest drawings to find.
Yeah.
Because they were everywhere, Hirschfeld didn't get clippings of them at all. The New York Times, he got the New York Times, so he cut each one out.
Right.
That was very helpful. When they were in the Herald Tribune, he got the Herald Tribune and he cut them out.
Yeah.
But he didn't get papers from all over the country, and those drawings frequently did not appear in New York newspapers. So it's been very helpful. So thanks, Jay.
Yes. All right. Have a good week, and we will see you. Oh, that's your line, David.
We'll see you when we do.
Bye.
Bye-bye.